so slow.
Tonight, finally feeling free and it feels alright. Oh, time to do the things I like. Gonna see a princess, everything's alright. Oh, no job but I answer to. Ain't a fixture in the palace zoo. No, and since the carbonite's off me, I'm living life now that I'm free. Yeah, time to get myself together.
Hello and welcome to Film Book Cast, a Star Wars story, the official podcast of filmbook.com. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me, as always, is a Wookiee who will tear people's arms off when he loses.
Mike Scriccio.
How you doing today, Mike?
Good. I thought about trying the Chewbacca noise for like a second, but I just wasn't going to try it. But I'm doing great. How are you, Mike?
I'm good. I'm a little disappointed that you're depriving our listeners of your Chewbacca growl, which I'm sure is fantastic.
People would have assumed you just edited it in, so like I don't want people to think we're cheating,
right? Because this podcast is dedicated to realism in all of its
forms. That's right.
If you've never listened to Film Bookcast before, first we start with some film news and then move on into some discussions where Mike and I each discuss whatever piece of media we've been consuming lately, and then after that we move on into our featured review. This week we are discussing the latest film in the Star Wars universe, Solo, a Star Wars story. Now, Mike, were you looking forward to Solo at all?
On paper, yes.
Right. I mean, it's a Star Wars movie, so, like, I was looking forward to it because it's a Star War. But it is a movie that has had a very troubled production, right? Phil Lord and Chris Miller were supposed to make it, and then Ron Howard stepped in at the last second. And it's based on a concept that we weren't really, like, particularly that excited about. You know, the adventures of young Han Solo, no Harrison Ford. It's a tall order. This was a tall order, and we'll see how this movie did for us in just a bit. I actually don't know what your reaction to the movie was, so I'm excited to see what you thought of it. But right now, let's get into some film news. It's time for some film news on Film Bookcast, and we did just do an episode last week, so we don't have as much news to get through as we usually do, which is a nice change of pace. First off, though, we do have a couple of big stories here, and the first one is that Zack Snyder has announced his next project, Mike. You know, he has had a rough couple of years in terms of directorial projects. I mean, he's been stuck in the DC Universe for so long, right? He did Man of Steel, and then Batman vs. Superman, and then Justice League, which was kind of taken away from him and was reshot. It's barely a Zack Snyder movie, and it's barely a Joss Whedon movie. It just exists. It is very much the Solo, a Star Wars story.
Oh, man.
Of the DC Universe. I couldn't resist taking that shot. But anyway, Zack Snyder has announced his next project, and it's an interesting one, for sure. He is making a movie based on Ayn Rand's The Fountainhead, because of course he is.
confirming our theory that we live in the Snyderverse. Go ahead.
Yeah, whatever, you're not wrong. I was really hoping he'd kind of take a step back from big-budget, terrible ideas. but he's going full steam ahead with this one. In all likelihood, this is something I will never watch. And I think it's a strange choice, considering the Atlas Shrugged movies existed. There's a couple of them, and they have been financial disasters. Like, they did terrible at the box office. I think they had to crowdfund the third one, and I don't think it even made their crowdfunding goal. Like, nobody wanted to see those movies. So The Fountainhead, I mean, is going to have a lot more money behind it. It's a major studio that's funding it, I think. But, it seems right. Like, if any filmmaker who's going to adapt The Fountainhead, I feel like Zack Snyder is right on the top of that list. but not because of his... I feel like a lot of the ideas that are present in Ayn Rand's work and The Fountainhead and stuff like that is present in some in his own ideas in terms of particularly Batman vs. Superman, actually. So, you know, there's interesting stuff there to analyze, but I think it's going to be terrible. And I am sure that the douchey kid in your socioeconomics class will write an essay about it one day, and he'll get a partial scholarship.
Oh, you know it.
So good for him, I guess.
Yeah, good for that guy that sucks giant balls. And in, like, a bad way.
Right, right, right. Do you remember, I don't know if you went through this whole process when you were in high school, but I'm assuming you might have, when, you know, you're in high school and you were told, like, oh, yeah, you can get scholarships, like, for doing anything, right? You can, like, stand in your head for 2 hours and you can get a scholarship for it or something. Right? Like, that would be that kind of thing, like, just random scholarships. And I remember looking through a lot of scholarship sites, like, looking for scholarships. I never got any, but I remember... Yeah. I remember looking for a lot of them, and every 10th scholarship that was offered was like, read Ayn Rand's Atlas Shrugged and write like 1,000 words on it or something like that, or read The Fountainhead. Yeah. And I never did any of that because I was like, well, I don't want to read a book. But like,
good job, Mike.
But yeah, and that's why I didn't get the scholarship. So otherwise, I know I would have gotten it. But anyway, let's move on from this Zack Snyder Fountainhead news and get into this other superhero-y kind of news, if you consider this character a superhero, which I guess he kind of is.
All right.
So, Mike, are you a fan of Spawn?
You know, I don't really know a whole lot about it. Kind of conceptually, yeah.
Okay, have you seen the Spawn movie from 97?
On August 1st, prepare for the dawn of the darkest night in history. From blood to blade, from flesh to steel, from man to spawn.
Peek-a-boo.
I have, but not in a long time, like, since I've been, like, aware of movies in, like, in a critical sense. So, no, I'll say no.
Okay, I have also seen it, but I was really, really young. I was like 6 or 7, like way too young to be watching Spawn. And, the reason I watched it, I had a friend when I was that age who was legit obsessed with Spawn. He had like an older brother who was really into the movie, and he showed it to us, and like he was all about Spawn. So I'm sure he's really excited about this news. Jamie Foxx is going to be starring as Spawn for a new movie directed by the creator of Spawn, Todd McFarlane, for Blumhouse. Blumhouse is producing this movie, so it's going to have a budget of about $10 to $12 million. I'm kind of into the idea of like a low-budget Spawn movie, you know?
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens. But at the same time, Todd McFarlane, like, the online reaction to Todd McFarlane directing it is, like, not great. Like, I guess he's not, like...
Is he a bad person?
I don't think he's necessarily a bad person. He's just, like, an idiot. I don't mean to, like, throw that out there, because I really don't know that much about him. But just, like the online reaction that I'm seeing, it's, like, not super positive about Todd McFarlane being the voice behind this, even though he's the creator of Spawn. But that said, still, Blumhouse doing, like, this low-budget kind of anti-hero, hell-beast superhero movie, like, I'm kind of into it. Kind of into the idea.
There's this kind of, like, weird era of forgotten superhero movie in, like, the late... mid to late 90s that I often think about.
Yes.
Like Spawn and Blade and like those kind of movies, and how awesome would it be to see them come back in like our modern version of superhero movies.
Right.
So maybe we will. I don't know. I mean, at least we're getting Spawn. Hopefully it's cool.
Hopefully. I mean, from what I understand, the Spawn movie from 97 doesn't hold up that well, but it does have Martin Sheen in it apparently, which
ooh.
I was like, just looked up its Wikipedia page, and like Michael Jai White plays Spawn, which is pretty cool. And like John Leguizamo is a major character, and then like Martin Sheen is in it. I was like, what?
Martin Sheen
is in a Spawn movie? But I was like 6 or 7, so I didn't remember. But anyway, I'm due for a rewatch on Spawn. Definitely want to check that out at some point. But tentatively excited for this Spawn reboot, to say the least. And then finally, I got one last bit of film news, Mike, and this is a big one, if you still count Star Wars news as big news, because I feel like we get new Star Wars news like every week, so it's...
Yeah.
And it's always about a movie that will happen like 10 years from now, so...
But well, also the people that will spend an hour talking about whatever new sentence of Marvel news we got, so...
Exactly. And that's kind of the same deal, you know, we get new Marvel news at like on an almost weekly basis. Anyway, Star Wars is a science fiction franchise that originated in 1977.
I've heard of this.
Yes. It's a very popular franchise, and Disney currently owns the rights to it. Lucasfilm is a division of Disney now. They've been making a lot of Star Wars movies over the past few years. Force Awakens, Rogue One, Last Jedi, and the movie we're talking about later today, Solo, A Star Wars Story. And then there's this, like a shitload of other movies that are in the works. Rian Johnson's new trilogy. David Benioff and D.B. Weiss have a new trilogy. John Favreau is working on a TV show. They're working on that Obi-Wan movie. And now James Mangold has been hired to write and direct a Star Wars movie based on Boba Fett, one of the most popular characters for some reason in the Star Wars movies.
I have such a, like, is he really, though? I feel like it's a meme that Boba Fett's popular.
Boba Fett's always been huge. Boba Fett has been huge since 1980, man. Like, this isn't, like, a new thing.
I know, but, like... But is it real, though, is what I mean. Is it just some, like, weird perceived phenomenon that everybody loves Boba Fett, but nobody actually really loves him?
I think people actually do really love Boba Fett.
Okay. Right. I mean, yeah, I don't know.
I don't get it, You know? Yeah. I don't understand it. This is a character who basically did nothing and then died. Right?
The best thing he did was die.
Yes. And it was hilarious when he died. But anyway, James Mangold, great filmmaker. You know, he's just coming off of Logan right now. You know, he's really talented. I love James Mangold. Now, he did 310 to Yuma and Walk the Line and a bunch of cool stuff. But the Boba Fett Star Wars movie is something that has been talked about for a long time. It's been one of the potential spinoffs for a long time. This was actually the movie that Josh Trank was supposed to make for Star Wars a while back. Remember that he was fired for Fantastic Four?
Yeah, and like blowing up a hotel or whatever he did.
Right. Yeah, he sicked like 8 dogs on the hotel room or whatever. I don't really know what happened. But anyway, and even before then, like when Disney bought Star Wars, when Disney bought Lucasfilm, Joe Johnston was talking about wanting to make a Boba Fett movie. He was the director of the first Captain America movie, Jurassic Park 3 and stuff like that. And he actually did a lot of the visual effects work on the original trilogy of Star Wars. And he was instrumental in creating the design of Boba Fett. So it would have been kind of cool if he ended up making a Boba Fett movie for Star Wars. That said, you mentioned that Boba Fett is a character that, you know, he's just a guy. He's a costume. More than
literally.
And I'm sure there's a lot of the, like, extended universe stuff that, like, deepens the backstory of Boba Fett. And he is present in one of the prequels, Attack of the Clones, as a little kid, which, of course. But did you ever hear Patton Oswalt's bit about the Star Wars prequels?
Is that from Parks and Rec or whatever?
No, it's in a stand-up, and he's talking about how excited he was for the prequels and stuff like that. And he's talking to George Lucas, and like George Lucas is like, oh, hey, you like Boba Fett, right? And Patton Oswalt's like, oh, yes, man, I love Boba Fett. He has the blaster, and he has the jetpack and all that. And so it's like, yeah, well, in this movie, you get to see him as a little kid. And Patton's just like, what? I don't want that. Like, yeah. Oh, you like Darth Vader, right? Well, in this movie, he's a little kid.
Well, hey, you say you're a Star Wars fan. Do you like Darth Vader? I fucking love Darth Vader, dude. The helmet and the cape with the sword, that's great, man. Is he in the first movie? Yeah, in the first movie, you get to see him as a little kid. Is he like a little Damien Omen kid, like evil and killing people with his mind and shit like that? No, he's just like this little kid, and then he gets taken away from his mom, and he's very sad. I don't really care about him as a little kid at all. I just like the helmet and the sword and the cape. That was kind of cool about him. Well, hey, don't worry, because guess who shows up in the second movie? Boba Fett. There you fucking Boba Fett, yes, with the helmet, and he's a bounty hunter. That is awesome, man. That is so cool. Yeah, and in the second movie, you get to see him as a little kid. You look really sad.
Dude, I gotta say, I'm pretty fucking sad, man. That sounds awful. That all just sounds like shit.
Would you like some ice cream?
I would like some. I like ice cream, man. That'd be cool if I had like a dish of ice cream.
Well, here's a big bag of rock salt.
You just said I was gonna have a dish of ice cream.
Well, when you combine the rock salt with ice and cream and sugar and flavoring, it becomes. I don't give a shit where the stuff I love comes from. I just love the stuff I love.
Hey, do you like Angelina Jolie? Does she give you a big boner? Well, here's John Voight's ball sack. That's right. The pink, glistening ball sack she swam out of. Now jerk off to that, you lucky so-and-so.
I'm curious what you think a Boba Fett movie would be like, Mike. Like, do you think there's a version of this movie that works?
I think there is a potential version of this that works, and it is completely disconnected from everything else we know about Star Wars.
Okay.
Like, I think that's the only way a Boba Fett movie makes me interested, is if it is disconnected from his role as an Empire bounty hunter. If it's just him on some planet somewhere doing bounty hunter shit that's got nothing to do with Darth Vader and Emperor and fucking Luke and Han and everything.
Yes.
I might be in. If it's like a high political intrigue thriller, it's just like about Boba Fett negotiating his way through bounty hunter subcultures, like, I'm down. But if it's him doing shit that we happens off screen in the original trilogy, I'm out. That's the only way.
By the way, we're reviewing Solo, a Star Wars movie, in just a bit. But anyway. I think this movie, there are a lot of different ways I think this could work. I mean, again, James Mangold's a great director. I think he's got a really good eye for this kind of thing, and especially after Logan, I'm really interested to see what he does next. I would say make it like Dread, you know, make Dread, but with Boba Fett.
Oh, man.
Never take off the helmet, like just make it like an action movie and stuff like that. It'd be cool. Make it the John Wick of Star Wars movies.
Of Star Wars, yeah.
Yeah, it would be fucking insane. Or feeling that, like an ensemble bounty hunter movie that just happens to feature Boba Fett as one of the bounty hunters.
Make Seven Samurai, but with bounty hunters in
right.
Star Wars.
That Zack Snyder Seven Samurai movie was one that I wanted to see, right? That yeah. he was Zack Snyder was like originally rumored years ago to make a Star Wars movie that plays out like Seven Samurai, and it never happened. And I kind of wish it did. I think he might have knocked it out of the park. He might have done a really good job. And if Boba Fett was one of those bounty hunters, like even cooler. But you know, or make it like you know that one episode of Batman the Animated Series where all the villains are hanging out playing poker and telling their favorite Batman stories. Make it that.
It's just the opening scene from Reservoir Dogs for 2 hours.
Yes!
With bounty hunters.
Amazing! Just Boba Fett and Bossk and IG-88 and... You know?
Yeah.
So cool. I would be all about that. Or failing that, just make it like Deadpool and have Boba Fett being like a constant, like, breaking the fourth wall type character. I don't care.
It's just going waka waka at the camera. But I do have to say, we know none of those things are going to happen.
Oh, no. None of those things.
So what this means is this is just another white guy making a Star Wars movie nobody asked for. So that's disappointing.
Yeah. I mean, again, I think Mangold's a great director. I think he can make a really cool Boba Fett movie. But, you know, Lucasfilm does have a history of meddling with great directors on their Star Wars spinoffs. So, and now we're going to talk Solo, a Star Wars Story after our discussions.
Watch this. These are my discussions. Just when I thought I said all I could say, my buddy and I talk about movies we see. These are my discussions. There is so much to see, you and me. So we're going to talk about movies for our discussions.
All right, it's time for our discussions here on Film Bookcast. Mike, what do you have to discuss with us today?
Today I have to discuss a recent Netflix original release. This is Cargo, which I believe came out in 2017 in some festivals or something along those lines and got picked up by Netflix.
You're the first people I've seen. The first people who are still people.
What's the count left on them?
46 hours, give or take.
They're setting out hunting parties.
This is directed by Ben Howling and Yolanda Ramke? Written by Yolanda Ramke, or whatever. I don't know. Yep. We'll never know. I changed my mind in between saying her name twice, so that's what I'm going with. And this stars Martin Freeman. And this is a zombie movie, which is pretty cool on paper. It's set in Australia, like amid the zombie outbreak that whatever's going on. And it follows Martin Freeman and his family just trying to survive. The main drama tension is they have a toddler or infant daughter with them. So it's about them, you know, their family trying to protect their daughter, and stuff happens where they have 48 hours to deliver their daughter to a safe place before bad shit happens to them. So it sounds like it would be a really intense thriller drama, but it seems to take this weird, I don't want to say high road stance, right? I mean, zombies as a form of horror thing have always been a metaphor, right? There's a device in horror movies for, like, rampant consumerism and all, you know, the human nature and all this stuff. And they use that in this movie, but they twist it to sort of be about, like, fracking or, like, climate change, right? Like, as a result of climate change or something along those lines. And I feel like the metaphor never, like, solidifies within the movie, so it makes it feel weird and, like, just very on the nose, which is incredible to say that zombies as a metaphor is too on the nose, right? Yeah. But Martin Freeman does deliver a great performance. It's I think it's always fun to see him not be Bilbo. Because that's kind of like what he, that's kind of his
standard for Martin Freeman. It's like, well, at least he's not in a Hobbit movie, so he's probably not good.
He's he's probably doing okay. No, but I mean that, like, kind of, like, quirky, like, you know, funny, silly, like, wrinkle-his-nose character that he is in a lot of his movies.
Yeah.
Or a lot of his performances. So, but it's cool to see him be, like, be in a horror movie or movie with horror tropes and stuff happening in it. So, I mean, it's an hour and a half. It's on Netflix. You know, I think it's worth checking out to see Martin Freeman in a horror movie and a zombie do zombie things. There's some, like, pretty cool gore stuff happening, or weird sticky things, which is gross and okay. fun in zombie movies like that. So, yeah, that's Cargo.
Cool, cool. I think I'm pretty sure Martin Freeman is in another movie, another horror movie coming out this year. I think it's actually available on video on demand right now, and I haven't watched it yet, but I've heard it's great, called Ghost Stories. Which is playing at a bunch of, which is played at a few festivals, and I think is available on demand right now. But it's like an anthology horror movie where Martin Freeman is in the wraparound segments of. It's supposed to be very good. So cool. There's that if you need more of your Martin Freeman horror fix after you watch Cargo. And then I have a couple of discussions I want to talk about, Mike. The TV event of the year is happening today, Mike. Actually, as of this recording, it is May 29th. Which means that the first half of the fifth season of Arrested Development just hit Netflix. I'm very excited about it. The second half of the season hits later on in the year. We don't know exactly when yet. But I haven't gotten a chance to watch season 5 yet. I was able to watch a little bit of the show today, but that's because I was watching Arrested Development Fateful Consequences.
Now the story of what happened when the one man who was holding his family together finally let go. And the separate journeys that eventually gave them no choice but to come back together. It's Arrested Development. Fateful Consequences.
Now, are you an Arrested Development fan, Mike? Have you watched the show?
I have watched the original first three seasons, but I never watched the Netflix season.
Really? Why?
I don't know. I just never got around to it.
Man,
I was kind of like, eh, whatever.
That was when season 4 dropped. That was like if the Beatles had reunited for me, Mike. That was it was that big. You know, you remember how like obsessed I was with Twin Peaks: The Return during that summer? That was me when Arrested Development season 4 hit. Anyways, Arrested Development: Fateful Consequences is a sort of remix of season 4. So I will make clear, I love season 4 of Arrested Development as it is. I think it's a great season of television. It is an insane experiment. Okay, and you've heard about what season 4 is like, though, right? Like, I'm sure you know a little bit about it.
I don't remember what I've heard.
Okay, so the season 4 of Arrested Development, you know, it's an insane experiment. It's so clever. It still delivers a ton of laughs, not always at the pace of the show during the original run, but a lot of fans were turned off by it. And it makes sense. Each episode of that season focuses on one character at a time because logistically they couldn't get all the actors in a room together at the same time because all of them were off doing different things. So they ended up doing one episode. Like, there was 15 episodes in that season, all varying lengths. And, you know, there'd be like two episodes focused on Michael, two episodes focused on George Michael, two on George Sr., like one on Buster, one on Maybe, and that kind of thing. And a lot of fans were turned off by that. And I get it. It was very different from the original show. And it takes you on these parallel narratives that all coalesce beautifully in the end. Like, it's a really incredible the way it all comes together. But it can be confusing while you're watching it, and then by the time you get to it. Plus, it takes pretty much every character down some really, really dark paths. And it ends on a series of, like, equally insane and dark cliffhangers. And these are cliffhangers that have stood for 5 years because it's been that long since season 4 came out.
Wow.
Yeah. It is the Twin Peaks: The Return of sitcoms, Mike. It really is. I think it's time we realize that. But now, season 5 just came out, and as a surprise, Mitch Hurwitz, the creator of Arrested Development, revealed that he had actually re-edited season 4 into a more traditional season of Arrested Development, and it came out a couple of weeks ago. And now, much of the events kind of take place in mostly chronological order. There are still some jumping around here and there. And the episodes are structured so that at least a few different storylines, you're hopping between a few different storylines at the same time. And it's still great. It's still really good. you know, I like the season in both forms. I think this actually fixes a lot of the pacing problems that season 4 had originally, because in season 4, you know, it's almost by necessity there's going to be some pacing problems because it is focusing on one character per episode, and some of those characters' episodes are a lot stronger than others. Like, I think the George Sr. episodes in that season are kind of a slog to sit through and that kind of thing. But, you know, now you're just popping in on George Sr. for, like, 5 minutes at a time, episode to episode, and his story works a lot better. It's a lot tighter and stuff like that. Now with the re-edit, like, you kind of lose a little bit of just the way the setups work. Like, the way that season was structured originally was just that, like, you know, something would be introduced in episode 1 and not be revealed until episode 15, and you'll be like, that's amazing. And sometimes something would be introduced in episode like 14 that would actually be solved in like episode 4, but you didn't realize it until you like rewatched the season. You were like, whoa, that's why that was, and that kind of thing. So I think this kind of steps over some of that, and some of the jokes work a little bit better than the first time around, but it's still a blast. Like, I had a lot of fun watching. I just finished it today, and it's a 22-episode season, all 22 minutes long. And since it had been a couple of years since I watched it, it was the perfect refresher for me before season 5, which, again, is out right now. I cannot wait to watch it. It's 8 episodes that are out right now, and I think 8 or 9 episodes coming later in the year. But anyway, yeah. So that is Arrested Development, Fateful Consequences. It's fantastic. I mean, I think if you were turned off by the... by the original structure of season 4, you should give Fateful Consequences a shot, because it is really funny, and it you know, it feels more in line with the original show. But anyway, yes, that's Arrested Development, and then I have one more discussion on the docket here, Mike, and that is a movie called The House, which came out last year.
Alex going to college.
You guys must be pretty psyched, right?
Gotten so used to being us three. What's it gonna be like when it's just us?
Well,
hold on here.
Empty nest. Now this nest is gonna be filled with our loving.
It's gonna be a regular fuckfest right here.
Oh, yeah. Get your passport ready. Because we're gonna be going to fucktown.
And stars Will Ferrell and Amy Poehler as a couple who are trying to send their daughter off to college, but her scholarship kind of falls through, and they resort to opening up an illegal casino under their neighbor's house to try to raise money. Are you familiar with this movie, Mike, at all?
Yeah, when you had mentioned you were reviewing that movie, like, just House or The House, I didn't know what you were talking about, but I do remember those trailers for that plot. So, yes.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, so I had heard not great things about this last year. Like, when this came out, I remember coming out, I remember being kind of interested in it, because I love Will Ferrell and Amy Poehler, but at the same time, like, Will Ferrell hasn't really been in a good movie in a long time.
Yeah.
You know? It's been a while since his last, like, great comedy. Like, I am a fan of Anchorman 2, but I seem to be in minority on that one. But I had heard not great things about this, and then, like, a few months after it came out... Chance the Rapper, of all people, tweeted about it, and he was, like, talking about how great it was. Like, he loved it. And then once he tweeted about it, other people were like, you know, yeah, The House was pretty good, actually. Like, some critics, like, ended up watching it after he tweeted about it, and were like, yeah, that's actually pretty funny. So I watched it. It's on HBO Go right now, and it is. It's pretty funny. I enjoyed the movie. Will Ferrell and Amy Poehler are very good. Also, Jason Mantzoukas is in this movie, and I love him very much, and he's given, like, I think it's his biggest role in a mainstream comedy to date. And there's, like, a ton of just really great comedy people in here. Nick Kroll's in here, Alison Tolman, Rob Hubel, and a lot more. There's actually one amazing cameo towards the end that I don't want to spoil. But he's pretty great in the movie, and it's just a lot of funny bits. It's not like like a narrative. Like, it doesn't really hold together as, like, a story, but as, like, a series of escalating comic bits with some really funny performances. It's worth checking out. It's on HBO Go. People should watch it.
All right.
Yeah,
there you
and go. That is The House, and I think that about wraps up our discussions, Mike. Let's move on into our featured review of Solo, A Star Wars Story.
I've been running scams on the street since I was 10. I was kicked out of the flight academy for having a mind of my own. I'm gonna be a pilot. Best in the galaxy.
Hey, kid. I'm putting together a crew. You in?
That's yes.
All right, that was from the trailer for Solo, A Star Wars Story, the new movie written by Jonathan and Lawrence Kasdan and directed by Ron Howard. It stars Alden Ehrenreich, Woody Harrelson, Emilia Clarke, Donald Glover, Thandie Newton, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, Junis Suotamo, and Paul Bettany, among others. And the IMDb plot synopsis for Solo, A Star Wars Story, reads, during an adventure into the criminal underworld, Han Solo meets his future co-pilot Chewbacca and encounters Lando Calrissian years before joining the rebellion. Why are you laughing, Mike? What's I mean,
that's just like the most basic. It's just, don't worry about it. I can't articulate.
I think I get what you're laughing at. This is a synopsis that almost artfully reflects the type of the movie this is, because it's a movie that's mostly just about filling in the blanks for stuff that happens later on. And that's what this plot synopsis does. Anyway, I have had a roller coaster ride of emotions about this movie, Mike.
Yeah.
When it was first announced, you know, I was not on board.
No.
I was like, so like a young Han Solo movie without Harrison Ford? What? What are you like,
what? He's already young in the first one.
I know. But then they hired Phil Lord and Chris Miller, Mike. And I was totally on board. Yeah. Like, I did a complete 180. I was like, holy shit, that's amazing. Because they were coming off of, you know, Lego Movie and 22 Jump Street, and I was so excited for that. And then they got Donald Glover and Alden Ehrenreich, and I was super on board. I was like, yes, this is amazing. These guys and a Phil Lord and Chris Miller Star Wars movie, like, I'm in. And then they fired Lord and Miller. And then they got Ron Howard in their place. And I was like, well, I'm not excited about this anymore, but they've already assembled a pretty strong cast, so like maybe this can be fun anyway, right? That was kind of my attitude. And then the trailer started coming out, and I was like, yeah, this looks like it could be pretty fun. And so I was a little more into it based on the trailers. And then reviews started coming out, and I was a little less into it. And now, finally, I have seen the film, and I am ready to declare that it is fine.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fine. So, Mike, what's your take on Solo? I mean, you've been on this rollercoaster ride of emotions with me over the course of this. I'm pretty sure we talked about Lord Miller getting hired on this podcast years ago.
I think we did, yes.
So it really has been a journey that has been recorded over the course of time on previous episodes of the Film Bookcast. So you've been on this journey with me.
Yeah, yeah, and I agree. I was, I share your feelings. I was hyped for Phil Lord and Chris Miller, like, deconstruction of prequels, right, or something, or whatever it might have been. And it was just a goofy, silly comedy, I assume. I don't know. We'll never know what that movie was. But what we end up with, on one level, is good. I think fine is a good way to, as you said it, fine, with a capital F. Yeah, and, you know, I have a certain affinity for this type of story, right? Like, I loved Ant-Man. Like, I just like a good heist story.
Right.
Like, you know, twists and turns and crazy action that you can't believe. They're like, there's no way this plan's going to work, and weird shit, like, you know, by accident stuff works out maybe, right?
Yeah.
Like, that kind of story is my jam.
Yes.
It's my wheelhouse. So on that level, I had a lot of fun with Solo. Just on the surface, like, looking at images projected on a screen, I was like, these are fun images. But then you're like, okay, I'm going to turn my brain on for a second. And you're like, wait, though. How does that – why is that? And who – and how come? So, yeah, I think it's okay. It's got – I think it makes up for itself. The film makes up for itself by having that kind of twisty-turny, silly, fun, flying-by-the-seat-of-his-pants kind of heist story. Right. Or plot movie going on. So I'm willing to forgive it for that. But then it raises so many questions and there's just so many things that when you know, you're in the car late on the way home from the movie and you're thinking about it and you're like, that was pretty bad, dumb. Why did that scene happen?
See, that's interesting that you were thinking about the movie when you were on the car ride home, because I feel like I haven't thought about the movie since I saw it.
I mean, you know, it's still within the 20 minutes after the movie, so like sure. I think that'll count, maybe.
It hasn't dissipated from your mind like the hobo from Polar Express yet.
Exactly. That hasn't happened yet.
Yeah. I think this Solo doesn't really do anything that's like particularly new or interesting for the Star Wars movies. And I think at points it like actively detracts from the mythology that it's trying to fill in. But yeah, it also delivers on like fun Star Wars-y space romp stuff, you know,
for
a good chunk of its running time. I think the characters are all enjoyable. And I think it ends on a really strong note that I would like to see explored further. I know you disagree with me on this because you texted me about it.
Well, all right. Yeah, we'll discuss later.
We'll talk about that in spoilers. Though, based on this movie's box office, who knows if this will be explored further? And we referred to this a little bit, I think, at the beginning of the podcast, or I think it might have been before we actually started recording. This movie made about $100-ish million on its opening weekend, which sounds pretty good. But for a Star Wars movie, it's really bad.
Yeah.
And that I think it goes into a lot of factors. I mean, for the one thing, I feel like a lot of people didn't know this movie was coming out, because trailers didn't start coming out until like 2 months ago. Also, Last Jedi just came out. You know, I feel like Disney has conditioned audiences for that December release date. And by throwing this one in the middle of the summer, and it's a very crowded summer, you know, Avengers just came out, Deadpool 2 just came out, and stuff like that. Like, and, you know, we're on the way to Incredibles 2 and Jurassic World and Mission Impossible. There's a lot of movies coming out over these couple of months. And, you know, after we just had a Star Wars, like, why would we have a new Star Wars 5 months later? It's odd. And, you know, just conceptually, like, it's a young Han Solo movie without Harrison Ford. Like, it's a tough sell. It's a tough sell for people. So, I mean, $100 million is not bad by any means. I think it'll probably do okay. But considering the production behind this movie, the budget was super high because they had to reshoot the entire thing after they fired Filler and Chris Miller, basically. Like, I think I've read that, like, 30% of it is Lord Miller and, like, 70% is Ron Howard or something like that. Wow. And it wouldn't surprise me if it was even more than that. And they're trying to downplay how much of a disaster the production of this movie was. So it's you know, it's I think the budget for this movie circles around like $250 million. Add on like another $200 million from marketing and stuff like that. This movie has to break, I think I read, about like $600 million in order to turn a profit, and it will probably do that, but like just barely, you know. And
maybe,
yeah, like it'll do well in America, or it'll do fine in America based on its current projection. But it's and in worldwide it'll probably do pretty good. But Star Wars is not catching on that much in China. Like, I don't know if you've been following that at all, but like China has not been embracing the Star Wars franchise as much as the rest of the world has. And so that's why, like, The Fate of the Furious is the highest grossing opening weekend of all time, or, you know, that kind of thing. Star Wars is a very distinctly American property, and so if it can't do super, super well in America, it's going to suffer. And that's kind of what's happening with Solo right now. So who knows what's going to happen further. Like, there was talk about maybe a Solo 2, based on what this movie does at the end, I think a Solo 2 would be a mistake, but what this movie introduces at the end could be a really cool idea for a different Star Wars spinoff, and I'll talk about that in the spoiler section. But, you know, I think that idea that I'm having is a lot different than the idea that Lawrence and John Kasdan have, because I was reading an interview with them, and I guess I really should save that for spoilers, I guess. But, you know, I should point out, Lawrence Kasdan is an original Star Wars writer. He wrote Empire Strikes Back. He wrote Return of the Jedi. He was on both of those movies. He also co-wrote Force Awakens. If there's anybody who knows Han Solo, it's Lawrence Kasdan. Right? Yeah. Like, he is the guy. And so it makes sense that there was a lot of clashing on set between the Kasdans and Filler and Chris Miller, who I imagine were trying to work around the script for this movie, because Lawrence Kasdan and John Kasdan wrote it. And I would argue that this script is not very good. And or at least, I think the script is fine. It's decent, but there are certain sections of it that I would make fun of if I was Filler and Chris Miller, you know?
I mean, their whole shtick is, like, self-aware meta jokes about the genre or film they're making, right? Like,
right. And there's stuff in this movie that is left in that I feel like would have played really well in a meta self-aware movie.
Yeah.
You know? Like something that's making fun of itself. I think, you know, Phil and Chris Miller would have had a lot of fun with that, and some of the stuff in this movie would be like, yeah, this would be better if we were acknowledging how ridiculous this is. You know, not like it doesn't really matter. Like, I feel like the Kasdans and Kennedy wanted to keep this movie within the Star Wars canon, right? I don't care about the canon. I want to have a fun movie.
You know?
I just want to have a fun time. If it means, like, destroying the character of Han Solo for a few jokes, like, I'd be kind of for it. I wouldn't say destroying the character of Han Solo, but we're, I think, changing him in ways that I'm not sure I am cool with, you know?
Right.
For this more serious story. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think that's part of what I was talking about with, like, when we were discussing Boba Fett, right? The Boba Fett movie, if when that happens. The promise of the Star Wars story concept, right, to me, and I think, you know, we've talked about this probably before, when they announced that they were going to do this other trilogy of movies in between the episodes, right? We had the opportunity to go off and explore the vast Star Wars universe that exists. Even if they threw out the canon of the books, like the extended universe stuff, and like we're going to start an all new canon or whatever they're doing, there's still an entire universe or galaxy, like a literal galaxy, because we're in space. But instead, we still keep following the same characters, setting up the same events for things we've seen earlier already. Like, we've seen all this stuff already. Well, yeah. Not these specific events, but we've seen where these events lead to, which is, I think, part of the pitfall of prequels in general, right? Like, there's moments where everybody's life is in danger, but, like, we've seen you in 7 more movies. Like, we know that you don't, like, nothing bad happens to you. Like, I don't, like, it just totally undercuts the tension of a lot of the action and stuff. And hopefully they don't keep making the same exact, I mean, we've already announced Boba Fett, so they haven't learned their lesson. but you know what I mean? Like, that's what I want. I think Rogue One was just off stage enough of the original trilogy and stuff that it was I still got that feeling that it was something we hadn't seen before. It's about events we've heard in one line of dialogue, right? So it's something
right.
that is okay. Like, I'm down with that, learning that story. But this is like this falls into the trap of like, but we don't really need any of this to change any of the other stuff, like the older stuff. We get it already.
Right, right. To be fair, this movie is also mostly built around one line of dialogue in the original movie. But anyway, yeah, I will say I think the first 40 minutes or so of this movie are pretty rocky. I think they're the worst part of the movie, is like the first like 30, 40 minutes. Mm-hmm. I think once they show up at Dryden Voss's place, Paul Bettany's area, things start to pick up. They mostly smooth out. You know, and from there, it's a relatively fun space adventure. And, you know, in those first 40 minutes, like, there are some fun stuff, but it all feels pretty inconsequential. And I think the absolute dumbest prequel stuff is in that first 40 minutes. Like, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and it's what you're saying. Like, in these prequels, I don't necessarily mind that we know where the story's going. Because I'm watching, you know, a Star Wars movie. I'm assuming the hero makes it out alive. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
it would be a shock if they didn't. That would be the spoiler. But with this kind of thing, it's like how, like, it feels like it's answering questions that no one was asking. And that's the problem. It's
yeah.
like, you know, like, oh, how did Han get his last name Solo? And I was like, why can't his name just be Han Solo? Like,
yeah.
Who cares? We have a character named Luke Skywalker. Like, that's a more ridiculous name than Han Solo. Like, Solo could be a person's actual name.
Yeah.
Anyway, I do think Alden Ehrenreich does a pretty good job of embodying the role of
yes.
Han Solo without doing a Harrison Ford impression, which I think is key. Like, if he was, you know, doing an impression of Harrison Ford, I think it would have tanked spectacularly.
Yeah.
I don't think he's ever as memorable as Harrison Ford, but that would have been basically impossible, you know?
Yeah, he's the Jai Courtney of Han Solo.
Of the two Han Solos, yes, one of them, I guess, has to be the Jack Courtney.
Yeah.
But he does a good job. Same with Donald Glover as Lando. He's, like, I think the standout of this movie. He's great.
Yeah, except he's doing a Billy Dee Williams impression, and it's amazing.
Right, right. And I agree with that. But also, he is a supporting character, which I think makes it okay.
Yes, you know, no, absolutely.
If he was the lead character, it would be a little weirder if he was doing a Billy Dee impression. But since he's only in, like, maybe 15 minutes of this movie, he can pop in, do a Billy Dee impression, and it's fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah. Also, Chewbacca is great, because he's Chewbacca. He's great.
Yeah.
Like, Chewbacca gives great performances himself, and it's great. also, as far as the new characters go, I think all the new characters are pretty fun to watch. My MVP would be L3, Phoebe Waller-Bridge, the droid.
Yes.
Which she is a unique droid in the Star Wars universe. I liked having her around. Not a big fan of where they go with that character, but you know, when she was around, I enjoyed it. Also, Paul Bettany's having a blast in this movie. I mean, he's only in like two scenes. He's having a blast. I love
it. Yeah. Did you see the story about how he got in this movie? Apparently.
Oh, he like texted Ron Howard like, "You up?" And he
yeah.
Ron Howard was like, "Yeah, what up?" I was like, "Can I be in Star Wars?" And he's like, "Sure."
Yeah, I think I saw somebody. Or somebody did an interview with him, and he showed him the text message where he said he texted Ron Howard and was like, "Have you ever spent long nights awake in bed wondering why you're not in this new Star Wars movie yet?" And Ron Howard was like, "I'll see what I can do. I'll get back to you," which is amazing. Like, I can't. Like, I love that. That's how that happened, because he's a great villain, which
yeah.
I think he plays that character very well.
Yes.
And it's goofy, over the top gangster villain, and that's exactly what I needed. I wanted that from this movie.
Exactly. Yeah, definitely. I also want to give a shout out to Bradford Young's cinematography, which I thought was very good. It's kind of divided people a lot because it is very dark. I'm not sure it actually fits this kind of story, like the tone this movie's going for. Like, I feel like it kind of matches the aesthetic of Rogue One, and it seems like it should be aiming for something a little lighter. But still, I think it looks great. Like, the movie visually is pretty fantastic.
Yeah, it sort of looked like there's a couple moments, particularly on Carillion. Is that how the first
Corellia.
Corellia.
Yeah. He drives a Corellian Corvette, but he lives on Corellia.
It's like, oh, this is B footage from Blade Runner 2049. and like, that's not like a total critique, but for some of it, it was.
Well, it's interesting because Bradford Young actually shot Denis Villeneuve's previous movie to Blade 2049, Arrival. Interesting connection that you made there, Mike. But anyway, I will say there are you know, Lord Miller obviously fired almost all the way through filming, and most of their stuff was replaced. There are a couple of moments sprinkled out that feel like to me that they were left over from the Lord and Miller version. You know what I mean? Like, there's a couple of like jokey bits, and I'm not saying like every joke in the movie was a Lord and Miller bit. Like, I can't say for sure what was Lord and Miller and what wasn't. But I also feel like they're like I know their stuff well enough. Like I've seen everything they've done, basically, that I can probably point out. Like, there's a couple of jokes in this movie that I feel like that was definitely that was Lord Miller bit, and I'll talk about those in spoilers. But this is Ron Howard's movie, and even though I ultimately enjoyed it, I really couldn't shake the feeling that I really wish I could have seen the Lord Miller version. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
it's just like, this movie could verge into self parody and subversion of expectations so easily. Lord Miller would have been the perfect guys to do that. And you know, it does feel like a repeat of the Edgar Wright Ant-Man situation, but that I think that happened. You know, Edgar Wright was fired or let go or left the project a few weeks before filming had started, and so Peyton Reed was able to have a little bit more of a directorial voice in that movie. And Edgar Wright's DNA was still kind of in that movie, too, and so you kind of have a mix of both their styles. And Ant-Man ultimately works for me, I think. I like Ant-Man more than this, for reference, just like you do. But I've also seen people comparing this movie to The Last Jedi a lot, and that makes sense, because The Last Jedi just came out 5 months ago. And The Last Jedi was a very divisive Star Wars movie, you know, people, and I feel like the people who didn't like Last Jedi are liking this movie more than the people who did like Last Jedi. And it's at least that's what I'm seeing online, at least, you know, and I don't think this movie should necessarily be compared to The Last Jedi necessarily, because they are aiming for very different things. But I think it's interesting that, you know, there are a certain section of fans who are more into a movie like Solo, which doesn't really push the narrative forward, but it kind of gives them more of what they think they want, right? It gives them more things like, oh, Han Solo and Chewie on adventures and stuff like that. Whereas The Last Jedi is doing, I think, much more interesting things, you know? And I've seen a few people who loved Solo and think it's the best of the Disney Star Wars movies. And when I see that, I feel like I'm taking crazy pills. Like,
yeah, you're looking at a plebeian tweeting, Mike. Exactly. That's what's happening.
And I don't begrudge people disliking The Last Jedi. They're wrong, but I don't begrudge them that.
They can have that. It's fine.
Yeah, but I wish this movie was a tenth as interesting or inventive as The Last Jedi was, or even as The Force Awakens was, you know? And
yeah.
I want my Star Wars movies to expand the universe, push the narrative forward, or at least bring in a distinctive and fresh voice to make the familiar stories feel different. And Solo does not do any of those things. and instead, it just exists. And I like Ron Howard. I should point that out. I do like Ron Howard. I think he's a solid director. He made Apollo 13, which is fucking incredible. And, you know, I generally have liked and disliked a lot of his movies. Probably I'm half and half in his stuff. But he's a solid director. He's very competent. He does what he needs to do. He's a workmanlike director. Plus, he produces and narrates Arrested Development, so I can't hate him.
He's so nice.
He's so nice. And actually, his reactions on Twitter have been pretty fantastic. I don't know if you follow him on Twitter or not.
No, I don't.
Well, he was retweeting a lot of people who were like, going to see Solo, I'm very excited. But he was also retweeting people who were like very tentative about Solo, or he was like, yeah, you know, I like some stuff, I didn't like some stuff. He's retweeting like basically everything. He's just excited that people are seeing the movie. Because, I mean, the last several of his movies didn't do that well at the box office. And so somebody actually tweeted at him about Solo's box office and how it kind of underperformed. And he's like, oh, what's your take on that? Like, kind of being a dick about it. And Ron Howard retweeted it, and he was like, well, yeah, it's underperforming, but it's a personal best. So I'm going to take it. I'm going to take it as a win. And I was like, yeah, good for you, Ron Howard. Like, I'm happy for you. Like that's nice.
Yeah, he needed that one, you know?
Yeah, very cool, very cool. So, yeah, I mean, with Solo, I had a reasonably good time, you know, and but not enough that I had particularly strong feelings about it, I feel like. I think when I walked out, I actually saw it twice, and I'll tell you why that was.
I'm going to guess it was a girl.
It wasn't, actually.
Well, all right.
That wouldn't have been the first time that I had done that. But, no, I went on a Thursday night, the opening night. It was sold out, and I bought tickets ahead of time, so I was there. But I was exhausted. Like, I was shot, and I had also drank a lot of beers beforehand, and I was not in, like, the total mind frame. So I was, like, almost falling asleep the first time I saw it. And I came out of the movie, and I was like, yeah, I mean, I guess it was okay. Like, but I wasn't sure it was because I was exhausted or whatever. Anyway, the next day, it was Friday, it was like maybe less than 24 hours later, and I was talking to my friend who hadn't seen it yet, and he was like, hey, I'm going to see Solo, you want to go see it? And I was like, yeah, why?
Why not? Yeah, sure, I guess.
I have movie pass, so I can go see it for free and stuff, so I went the second time, and I'm glad I did, because I, you know, enjoyed it a little more the second time. I still had issues with it, but I was, you know, I enjoyed it more, and I was in a more conscious state of mind to be able to watch the movie.
That's probably a good call.
But when I saw it the second time, I walked out and I was like, yeah, I think I like that a little more than Rogue One. Like, I was kind of like that. And then, you know, a little while later, I was like, you know, I remember a lot more about Rogue One than I do about Solo. And I just watched Solo twice 5 days ago. So
So that says everything you need to know.
Yeah, I mean, I do feel like Solo might be a more consistent movie than Rogue One. I feel like I like it for a longer period of time than I do, or at least Rogue One I like, but I feel like I like it in chunks. Like, I feel like the first two thirds of that movie are all over the place, and then the last third is pretty consistently good. Whereas this one, first act, like kind of wonky, but then after that, it kind of smooths out. So I think I like it for a longer amount of time consistently than I do Rogue One. But I feel like Rogue One has much more memorable set pieces and more memorable stuff going on. So, yeah, this is a fun little romp in space. It does just about everything to try and please everybody. But I think when you try to please everybody, you're going to be underwhelming. And that's kind of what I felt about Solo.
I agree with all those words that you said. All
right. Cool. So I think we do have some spoilers that we want to talk about, Mike. There is some stuff we've got to get into.
Yeah.
So let's do that. Let's move on to spoilers for Solo, A Star Wars Story, starting right now. All right. Spoilers for Solo, A Star Wars Story, starting right now. I don't know why I'm saying it as if I'm a cast member. Oh, hello! But I'm going to commit to it.
You're sticking with it. That's
I'm
what's
sticking
important.
With it. Hey, Mike. This week I watched the latest film in a massive franchise that was purchased by Disney a few years ago, which featured a character speaking to a cloaked figure, only for that figure to take off his hood and reveal himself as a red-faced villain from the series past.
God damn it!
But enough about Avengers Infinity War, Mike. We need to talk about Solo, A Star Wars Story. Yeah, so the big reveal at the end of this movie, Mike, is Darth Maul. He unveils his hood, and it's Darth Maul, and he has robot legs. And you texted me, and you were like, what?
That doesn't make any sense. It's so fucking dumb.
You were not a fan of that. So I want to read back your text, because I was...
Sure.
Because I was a little confused by what you were saying. So, okay. So you texted me, I guess right after you got out of the movie.
Yeah, like literally I walked out and texted you that.
Yesterday at 1:06 p.m. you were like, I see we're taking the X-Men approach to timelines in the Star Wars universe now. And I was a little confused because I didn't know what you were talking about. But I went along with it and I was like, you joke, but I totally watched Solo and X-Men Story. And then you were like, Han is apparently old enough to be Leia's grandfather now, so that's cool. And I was like, what?
Wait, what?
I don't think they gave a clear time frame. I assume this was maybe a couple years before Rogue One. And you were like, doesn't Darth Maul die in Phantom Menace when Anakin is 10? And I was like, oh! Okay. I see what's going on here. He did. That reveal was meant to show to you that he is back and he has robot legs. And you were like, that is a swing and a miss on that. And then I tried to send you a gif of Laurie Dern in Jurassic Park going whoosh, but it's...
Doing the whoosh. I got it.
Oh, you did? Okay.
It didn't
seem like a scent. But anyway, yeah. So you were not a fan of this Darth Maul reveal, Mike.
Well, I'm not a fan of it only because the point of the reveal is supposed to be that he has robot legs and yet he's in a full-length cloak as far as I remember.
Well, it's not... The reveal isn't necessarily that he has robot legs. The reveal is that he's alive.
But, like, if you don't know that he does... Like, I just assumed that meant it took place when he was alive because we saw him die already. And this is a movie that takes before all those other movies. Like, it just made no sense to me where it was supposed to take place in the timeline then. Because I didn't see the robot legs because he's in a cloak. And I was like, oh... Okay, It made it feel real weird. I was confused.
Yeah, fair. I mean, you do get a glimpse of the robot legs, like, when you first see him.
But the point is supposed to be that he's got, like... I know the point isn't that he has robot legs, but it's supposed to show that he's alive, right? Like, after that fact, after we saw him get cut in half and thrown down a shaft, like, you gotta focus on it. You gotta make it a big... You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
It just felt
real weird.
Okay, yeah. I get you. I'm with you. I love that. I love that reveal.
Yeah. I totally acknowledge that it's because I missed the key detail of the reveal. But I feel like most people probably will. I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Reactions that I saw online were kind of mixed about it. But I thought it was a really cool reveal for a couple of reasons. And I have some conflicting thoughts about it, which I'll get to in a minute. But I will say, Darth Maul is a character who does die in Phantom Menace. He is sliced in half by Obi-Wan Kenobi. He is dead. He is deader than dead. He is dead as a doornail, like Jacob Marley.
It's an ex-Sith Lord.
He is an ex-Sith. But... As you may know, Mike, there are a couple of cartoon shows based on Star Wars. Star Wars The Clone Wars and Star Wars Rebels. And I remember a few years ago, I haven't really watched these shows. I saw, like, the first season of Clone Wars back when it was on TV because I was, like, 14 or whatever when it was airing. So I saw like that, but I haven't really watched anything past that. But from I remember reading that Clone Wars had brought Darth Maul back. Like there was big arcs that would involve Darth Maul in some capacity. And I don't really know that much about his involvement in the shows, but the fact like he is back, and those shows are considered canon by Disney, I think, Clone Wars and Rebels. I mean, Rebels definitely is, at least. I feel like maybe the fact that I had that extra knowledge that I know he does come back at some point made that a more effective reveal for me. But in the moment, I was just like, holy shit, it's Darth Maul! Because I had never expected to see that character ever again. Like, you know, no. I had never saw that coming in a million years. And they got Ray Park back to do it, so that was pretty cool. And his voice was actually... So in Phantom Menace, it's Ray Park acting it out, but his voice is dubbed over by Peter Serafinowicz. Which is weird. Like, just to think back on that, it's Peter Serafinowicz. He only has, like, four words in that movie that he says. But in the Clone Wars and Rebels TV show, he's voiced by Sam Witwer. And Sam Witwer actually did the voice for him this time around, too, which is kind of cool. And Sam Witwer, actually, he was also... I didn't know that he voiced Darth Maul in the Clone Wars show, but I saw his name in the credits, and I was like, oh, shit, Sam Witwer, because he was the voice of Starkiller in the Star Wars The Force Unleashed video game, which came out in 2008, which I was hyped for back when that came out. I mean, like, I was hyped for that game, because at that time...
I mean, it's a great game. A great game.
It was a pretty good game. I remember liking the story a lot, but the gameplay I wasn't big on, but I was hyped for it when it came out, because at that point, that was, like, the only new Star Wars media I felt like I was ever going to get. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was such a major thing, and it was such a huge addition to the canon that like Darth Vader had this secret apprentice and stuff like that. And I think all that's erased now. But Sam Witwer was the voice of Starkiller in that game, and so when I saw he was the voice of Darth Maul, I was like, oh, that's cool. That's neat. That's pretty
cool.
Look
at that. I mean, just my experience with that reveal as compared to your Boom Goes the Dynamite reveal. Like when the hood comes off, and it was. Red Skull, like my theater went insane.
Oh yeah.
And in this, nobody said a word. I don't think any. Like my mom literally leaned over to me and asked me who it was. Like that's the level of character he is to general population. Maybe
yes,
I don't, like, you know.
I will agree with that. I mean, I think he is an iconic character in terms of Star Wars fans. He's one of the few things about the prequel trilogy that people like latch onto and be like, oh yeah, he's awesome. Like Darth Maul was big. Like he was
Boba Fett of the prequels.
Yeah. Well, to be, I think Darth Maul does more than Boba Fett does.
Yeah, he does something. He does a thing.
Darth Maul has an actual fight, and he has the double lightsaber, which was huge at the time. I don't know if you remember how huge the double lightsaber was, Mike, in 1999. But man, when that I was 6 years old when Phantom Menace came out, and I remember seeing that trailer for the first time. And seeing Darth Maul come out and like, you know, show his like have his hand out and hit the lightsaber, and you know, one side comes out and it's like, yeah, it's a lightsaber, he's a cool looking Sith, and then the other side comes out and I was like, what?
The game has been changed.
This is huge. And I remember having that same reaction in the first teaser trailer for Force Awakens when you see Kylo Ren's triple sided lightsaber.
Cross guards, yeah.
If you want me to freak out, just add a side to a lightsaber. And I'm in. That's it. Like, I need the first like four pronged lightsaber in the next in episode 9.
I need the trident lightsaber to happen. But I do love that in this scene. I say love in a joking sense. When they're like, remember that, and he lights up his lightsaber because he does.
Yeah, that was a little weird.
Super weird.
Like, remember just who I am.
Like, yeah. That's what it felt like when it happened.
Yes. Now, that said, with all that, I will say, the second time I saw it, like, I was with a friend who I knew would freak out at this reveal. And so I was texting him during the day, and I was like, by the way, there's one moment by the end of this movie that I need to talk to you about. And he was literally convulsing when Darth Maul showed up. When he realized what was happening, I thought he was having like a seizure right next to me. It was great, which was really funny because he had the same reaction when Red Skull showed up in Avengers Infinity War. I was with him, and he actually his hand flailed so hard when Red Skull showed up that he ball tapped my friend, like it hit my friend in the balls, and my friend doubled over in pain, and it was great. But
that's amazing.
But luckily my balls were protected during the Darth Maul reveal. But
you wore your cup this time.
Exactly. But anyway, yeah, so I think for the general population, this isn't that big of a deal. But for Star Wars fans, it's pretty cool. And it sets up some really interesting directions for where they could take these movies. Like, now that Darth Maul is back, this is a huge kind of a game changer.
But
I don't want him in a Han Solo movie. That's the thing. That's the thing.
Right. But, like him being back... Where was he? Where are you for the other three movies that we know happened late after this point? If like this is it's always been a thing that makes me confused about Star Wars in general is in New Hope. Like, the Sith and the Jedi are this ancient religion that Darth Vader practices for no reason, and he's the only one.
Right.
But, like, if there's other Sith alive and stuff, where are you? Why are you an ancient Sith? Like, I don't understand.
Well, I don't think Darth Maul is considered a Sith anymore. If you look at the credits, he's actually just credited as Maul and not Darth Maul.
Okay, that's
which,
right.
There's that. I mean, I assume he's...
But he's in a black robe with a lightsaber.
Right. For all intents and purposes, he's basically a Sith. But I think, you know, once you're dead, I think you get excommunicated from the Sith Legion.
Oh, okay.
I think that's what happens.
It's the loophole to get out.
Exactly. You got to die to get out of the Sith organization. But I will say, you know, I think, you know, it seems like they're implying that Darth Maul will play a future role in Han Solo adventures. And that seems like the wrong thing to do. I am not a fan of that. You know, Mike Ryan, a critic who I follow, I think you follow too, he wrote an article this week that put into words pretty well for me what I was thinking, which is that this movie makes Han and Chewie feel like a really important part of the Star Wars mythos, and they absolutely should not be that yet. They should not be that in the stories yet. They should just be smugglers, you know, trying to smuggle stuff. That would be fun. Mike Ryan says it should be BJ and the Bear, but in space. And I agree. It would be great. It would actually be a great TV series. It would be pretty cool. By the end of this movie, Han Solo has basically funded the Rebel Alliance himself.
Yep.
And it's implied that he might come across Darth Maul at some point, which would not add up with the fact that Han Solo does not believe in the Force at the beginning of A New Hope. And I was reading an interview with John Lawrence Kasdan, and they seemed to think differently on that point. You know, they were like, well, Han Solo never believed in the Force, even after A New Hope. And I was like, what?
What movie did you write and see?
His son is Kylo Ren, you know? He knows the Force is real. In Force Awakens, he even says, it's true, all of it. And Lawrence Kasdan co-wrote that movie. So I was like, it blew my mind that they felt that way, but they were pointing to the line in A New Hope where Han Solo says, like, oh yeah, me and Chewie have seen a lot of strange stuff on this ship, and they were like, oh, well, that could be Darth Maul, and I'm like, that could be anything! it doesn't have to be Darth Maul.
What?
But that said, you know, this Darth Maul reveal, I think, is a great opportunity if they're going forward with that Obi-Wan movie instead of a Solo movie. There's a story there. That could be a great story for that movie, where Maul, maybe with Emilia Clarke by his side, like Kira, they're out for revenge against Obi-Wan. That would be cool. Yeah. I'd be into that. And it's Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan. How cool would that be, Mike?
Yeah, I saw... I can't help but think of this now whenever I think of Obi-Wan. Somebody pointed out that we have this... There's this weird thing that happened around Star Wars where those original movies became, set in stone, rock-solid canon, right?
Yeah.
Where... Because Obi-Wan Kenobi was wearing, tan robes in the desert, that's now the uniform of the Jedi in the prequels, right?
Yeah.
They send out the prequels, and that's what they always look like now. Which doesn't make sense for someone who's supposed to be in hiding. All he did was change his first name and keep his uniform on. that doesn't make any sense. Just because that's the image we saw. I don't know. I always think of that when I think of Star Wars, so I wanted to bring it up because I think it's hilarious. But that said... I don't know. I want these Star Wars story movies so desperately to be disconnected from the main story that we know already. I'm down for Obi-Wan, but to have it be Obi-Wan and Darth Maul feels too close already. Having Obi-Wan is close enough my desire for what these movies are going to be. As we've said already, obviously that's never going to happen. We're going to just keep getting the same shit over and over again. But... I would be down for an Obi-Wan v. Darth Maul, revenge story.
Yeah, I think it's actually a really cool idea. And I think that feels like a story that would be untapped. That's something that's never been referred to in these movies before. It's something that, I know nothing about. I think it has played out on Rebels or Clone Wars or something, but, it's never been on the big screen. And so I think that would be a really cool story to explore. I don't know if that's the direction they're going to go for Obi-Wan, but I think it's a really cool idea anyway. But yeah, I feel like having Han Solo face off against Darth Maul would be ridiculous. It would make no sense. Why would that even happen? Darth Maul would kill him instantly, and Han Solo would believe in the Force by the time A New Hope starts. It just wouldn't make any sense. But I don't know if we'll get a Solo 2, you know what I mean? Or if they're going to do these Star Wars spinoff movies, I could see them having some of the characters kind of overlap in these movies, right? like this Darth Maul shows up in an Obi-Wan movie, Emilia Clarke's character Kira could show up in it, and that would be kind of cool. Like there would be a nice sense of continuity between that. You know what I mean? But yeah, I think you're right. Like these movies, you don't have to focus on the same characters over and over again. Like that's all there is to it.
And that in the way that resolves, where Kira takes the ship and flies off to meet Maul or Darth Maul or whatever, that's so clearly a sequel hook that makes no sense because like we're talking about where are you? Where in my mind, where were you in those other if you were that important? Unless you're dead, you're going to show up in this guy's story again, in the story we've already seen.
Right.
So, I guess they all have to die. But it felt real weird to put a sequel hook in a prequel. That wasn't, the way Rogue One did it, where it ends, literally where the next movie starts, which was awesome.
Yes.
Which is so weird that I'm okay with that type of involvement. That level of closeness to the main story, the original trilogy in that movie... versus this one, and I don't know why that is. It might just because that relay race with the plans is so dope.
So great. That is, I think, the highlight of Rogue One for sure for me. In the middle of the most fan servicey scene, which is the most interesting part about that, it's couched with Darth Vader annihilating people, because I feel like that's what people were craving in that movie. They're like, oh, I want to see Darth Vader wreck some motherfuckers. And to me, that felt almost egregious, but at the same time, the relay race of the plans is so good and so powerful and so right for that movie. So there's a lot going on there, a lot of conflicting emotions for me. But what did you think of Kira as a character and her heel turn? And I guess also Tobias Beckett's heel turn, Woody Harrelson, his character too.
So there's a lot of things that I feel with this movie are just too much of things we've seen already. But it makes it, with Beckett, it makes sense. Just that type of scoundrel character. He says, I told you not to, assume everyone will betray you. And then he does, I'm okay with that kind of character in this type of, crime heist fiction. That genre, this genre trope, right, of that character. The mentor that betrays the main character kind of thing.
Yeah.
You see it coming if you think about it. But, sure, why not? It's fun. It was a cool reveal. I wasn't expecting Kira's because she is set up so much like just a romantic lead or, a romantic partner for Han. So, her thing, I wasn't expecting that, but I guess it also makes sense because obviously she can't be around because Leia's there.
Right. That was the thing. I feel with their relationship throughout the movie, I was not that invested in it. Because I know Leia shows up at some point, and I think Emilia Clarke is pretty good in the role. I think she's fine.
Yeah.
But, for the runtime, I was well, all right, this is, she's, I'm sure she's a nice girl, but Han, you gotta move on at some point, right? but then she has that heel turn where she reports to Darth Maul and stuff like that. And it's oh, okay, this is an interesting direction for this character to take. I would be interested in exploring this more. Kind of wish if you were going to do this, it would have been earlier in the movie or something like that. But this is fine. This is a cool hook for a sequel or another Star Wars story. Again, I really feel that plot is much better served in an Obi-Wan movie. Han and Kira never have to cross paths ever again, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, so where I guess I was going to go before, but I lost the train of thought. Beckett's betrayal is Benicio del Toro's betrayal. It's this it's the same thing basically. just that type of character. So that was another thing where it was a moment where it's we've seen this already in a thing. The reveal of the red faced villain from a previous movie. L3 and her fascination with revolutions. It's just Korg.
I guess I didn't put that together. All. But I guess you're right about that. I did really like L3, though. Maybe it was residual Korg love. But
I loved that take on droids and what she was, and it was amazing.
Yeah, she's introduced at a robot fight Korg club, and she's like, what are you doing? You're a slave, and that kind of thing. And this is pretty cool. I like this take, you know?
Yeah.
What was less cool was L3's death. I want to talk about that, which results in her nav computer being uploaded into the Millennium Falcon. And I've seen a few people point this out. There is something kind of Black Mirror-y about a robot revolutionary who is then forced into servitude to power a spaceship.
Oh my god. I didn't even put that together. Holy shit.
That destroy your mind.
Yeah.
And it's especially weird that Lando, who it's implied is boning that robot, just gambles the ship away to Han after that. You know? He has a special relationship with L3, and then he just gambles
the ship
away to Han.
Who's now part of the ship's computer.
Yeah.
Yeah, what the fuck? This movie's really weird.
Yeah, so that's weird. That's weird. Kind of changes my perception on the Millennium Falcon. It feels a little sadder now.
Yeah, I mean, because like that, I feel like that moment where that implication comes up, right, was set up as a joke, right? It's set up like, oh, L3 thinks she's this thing happening, but then like it's pretty much confirmed. Right, like Lando's reactions and like a tender carrying her body and like stroking her face while she's like no, like I thought it was just like a weird projection thing that was kind of fun, like a funny like girl talk joke thing they were making.
Yeah, yeah.
But no,
I think Lando was absolutely boning that robot, and I think Donald Glover has said like, you know, Lando is pansexual or whatever and fucks everything, and that makes sense. Like I'd buy that.
Yeah, well, I forget who said that. I don't think it was Donald Glover. Somebody said it.
I thought it was Donald Glover. Was it somebody else?
I can't remember off the top of my head.
All right, yeah, so that is definitely weird, and I was kind of not on board with that necessarily. But I loved L3 as a character, and I loved watching her, you know, stage a robot coup on Kessel. I thought that was pretty cool. I really, that whole sequence on Kessel, to me, is the highlight of the movie. Like I remember a few months ago, we were reviewing something. I don't remember what it was. It might have been Last Jedi. And we were talking about Solo, and you were saying, like, you know, we're going to see the Kessel run in that movie, and it's going to be dumb. Get ready for it. It's going to be super dumb. That's your exact words. And I got to say, I think the Kessel run is probably the best part of the movie.
I think the stuff on Kessel was pretty dope. I don't know how I feel about the Kessel run, though. I mean, Kessel, I guess, run. It was cool. Yeah, okay, I don't know.
I'm kind of kind of lumping that all together, like the entire Kessel sequence.
That whole set piece? Yeah.
Yeah, because I thought it was pretty cool. Like the robot revolutionary stuff, you know, all the in and outs and that kind of thing. But I mean, the actual Kessel run, like there's some cool spaceship stuff. There's TIE fighters attacking them. There's a Cthulhu monster. Like,
yeah, sure.
Like I was all about the Cthulhu monster. That was pretty cool. You know, as far as the Kessel run stuff goes, like that's the prequel-y stuff that I think works in the movie, right? It's if you're going to make a movie based on one line of dialogue in the original Star Wars, that seems like the best case scenario for what it's going for. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, and in addition to that, I mean, there's the game of Sabacc that Han and Lando play for the Falcon and stuff like that. And I thought that was pretty well done. Like that was well executed. It was a good intro to Lando and stuff like that. And you know, it was pretty funny. But then there's the lousy prequel-y stuff, right? There's the stuff like how he got the name Solo, which is literally he walked up to like the Empire and goes to be a recruit and,
to enlist,
and the guy's like, "What's your name?" And he's like, "Han." Last name? I don't know. Like,
yeah,
as like, all right, Han Solo.
Yeah,
like why? Why? This was a question that no one was asking. Like, I never for a second questioned the idea that his name was Han Solo. I just accepted, oh, yeah, it's Han Solo. But apparently, and I was reading through this, that's the scene, like, that John Kasdan pitched to Disney that greenlit this movie.
What? I assumed that was a Phil Lord and Chris Miller joke that got stuck in the movie.
In the screenplay, and I'm sure Phil Lord and Chris Miller were going to make fun of it. Like it was,
yeah.
Like it was going to be a bit that like they probably self-reference and stuff like that. I'm sure that's part of why they were going to get fired. But
what the fuck?
Because I think like the way he intended to be played is this very dramatic scene for Han Solo and stuff like that. Like I think it's supposed to be played like, you know, immigrants coming into America and being assigned a name kind of thing. I believe like somebody pointed out that he's probably referring to a scene from Godfather 2 where that exact thing happens. And like, sure, but like it plays really dumb in this movie. Like that's to me is the most egregious thing. Second most egregious thing is after he and Chewie meet, which, you know, he and Chewie meet and it's like fine. Like I wasn't against that, like how they met and stuff like that. It's kind of a fun sequence. But then they're on the Millennium Falcon and he's like, oh, so what's your name anyway? And Chewie's like, and Chewie growls and he's like, Chewbacca. We're going to need to get you a nickname. That's not, I'm not saying that every time. I was like, I didn't need the origin of how Han Solo came to decide to call him Chewie. Like, that's,
and I think he might not even be the first one to call him that. I think Thandie Newton's character might say it first.
She might. Who, by the way, dies like really early on in the movie.
Fucking pointless. I'm so mad about that.
Are you?
Yeah, because she's great. I loved, like, what, like, I think that first, like, train heist thing that happens when we first get the crew and, you know, when they, Beckett agrees to take Han and Chewie with him and, like, we get that crew. That was when I was like, finally, okay, we're going to do the heist movie stuff. And I was in. And I liked that whole interaction. Like, I loved the play of, what's his name, Rios, I think? The alien or something like that that's with them.
The one played by Jon Favreau?
Yeah, yeah, them. Like, he's just so goofy and, like, a little gangster guy with four arms. And there's, like, I am down for the team there, and then we just immediately kill everybody. Like, oh, all right. Yeah, this isn't the crew, I guess. Makes right. sense, because Lando and Emilia Clarke aren't here yet, but...
Right, yeah, I get that. Yeah, I mean, I agree with that, and I think Thandie Newton's death could have been really powerful. It could have been really interesting if Woody Harrelson had mourned her for, like, more than a second. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they were partners, but they were also, you know, husband and wife or lovers or whatever.
Something.
And, you know, they had a relationship, and I feel like he mourns her for, like, a second, you know, and then he moves on. And you don't really get anything in his performance to suggest that he's still torn up about it.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's kind of a bummer. Because, again, Thandie Newton is good in what she's given. I wasn't really big on Jon Favreau's alien character, honestly. I thought he was kind of annoying.
Okay. I mean, yeah, you're not wrong.
But
most of them are in these movies, in Star Wars movies.
Very true. But, yeah, as far as the train heist goes, like, I thought it was fine. But I feel like I was kind of waiting to get to the good stuff. Like, I feel like once the actual plot kicks in after that, you know what I mean? Like, the actual plot of the movie... involves the Kessel Run and stuff like that, and I feel like once they get to Dryden Voss's place, Paul Bettany's palace, like that's where I got more interested in what was happening. As far as the train heist goes, it was like a fun little action sequence, but I was just kind of like, it's all right.
Yeah. I mean, you're definitely not wrong. I think it is really funny though that like you said, it is based on this one line of dialogue from A New Hope that like it's like 40 years later we're gonna fix this mistake we might have made. Where like they might not have known that parsecs was a unit of distance, so now we have to rake this whole other movie to explain why that sentence makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, sure. I guess.
Yeah, let's spend $250 million
to fix that one line of dialogue.
But speaking of dialogue, I think there is some like fun pulpy Star Wars dialogue in this movie. I think Lawrence Kasdan is a good screenwriter, and he does have some good stuff. My favorite is in that kind of final showdown between. Han, Beckett, and Dryden Voss, where it's very good, the bad, and the ugly in that sequence, by the way. I think this movie is pretty heavily influenced by Westerns and stuff like that. Lawrence Kasdan actually wrote and directed Silverado, and I think you can see the DNA of that movie kind of in this one. But there's a very good, the bad, and the ugly quality to that, and there's one bit in that kind of Mexican standoff thing, which I loved, which is when they realize that they're all after the same thing and that it's all right in that room with them, the hyperfuel or whatever, and like, Woody Harrelson has like a look of recognition, immediately shoots the two guards that have blasters.
Yeah.
And Paul Bettany's like, "What are you doing?" And Woody Harrelson says something to the effect of like, "I'm thinking, and I'd like to be the only one holding a blaster while I'm doing it." That kind of thing.
Yeah.
I loved that line and his delivery of that. It was great. It was so good. And you know, I think there's some fun pulpy dialogue along the lines of that, kind of peppered throughout the movie. And I dug that about it.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the kind of thing I would want. Like, I wanted that from a Han Solo origin movie, right? Where we know he's a smuggler, we know he's a criminal, and I want just that down and dirty pulp crime story. Like, I wonder how much I would have been all about a Guy Ritchie Han Solo movie.
A Guy Ritchie movie. That would actually be kind of dope. Make it for $20 million.
Yeah, right? Lock, stock, and two smoking blasters. Like, I'm in. I'm so down.
That's really good.
Make that the Jabba the Hutt movie that they set up.
Yes. So that at the end of this movie, they do set up the idea that they're going to go to Tatooine and talk to a gangster, and that gangster is obviously Jabba the Hutt. And I think that was a fine way to end the movie. Like, it's, you know, it kind of teases the idea of a sequel, and if you have seen the movies, you know what's coming. But if you haven't seen the movies, then it's just like, oh, they might be going to this random planet where this gangster is. Who I wonder who that is.
If you're a person born literally yesterday.
And this is your first Star Wars movie.
Movie ever.
Why are you a day old and going to the movie theater? Please don't. Whatever you're doing, you do not have the mental capacity for it yet. But yeah, I thought that was a fine way to end the movie, and it does kind of open up the idea of a sequel. Like, I'd be kind of open to the idea of seeing this Han Solo and this Chewbacca doing jobs for Jabba the Hutt kind of thing. But I don't necessarily want anything other than that, if that's what they're doing for Solo movies, you know what I mean? Like, I don't need any more prequely stuff. I don't need anything else explained to me. I don't need to know how Lando got to Cloud City and stuff like that. Like, I can just like let that be, you know?
And that whole Han funds the rebellion thing, which like I thought the reveal, like when I don't remember the character's name, when they take the helmet off to like the pirate person,
right? And it turns out to be like a kid.
It's like a young kid, yeah. I thought that was pretty cool, and, like, he saw where it was going, you know. But, like, I feel like it's just it's so clumsy. Like, I half expected her to say, like, this is, you know, like, she says, like, oh, do you know what this is? And she, I forget what Han says when she's talking about the money he get, like, the coaxium or whatever, the hyperfuel.
Yeah.
I, like, half expected her to say it's the spark that lights the fire that starts the rebellion. Like, I expected her to quote Last Jedi. Like, that's...
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, which, by the way, this movie does... kind of call forward to dialogue from the future Star Wars movies in certain places. Specifically, there's one bit where they kind of ape the Han Solo "I know" moment in Empire Strikes Back. You know, in Empire Strikes Back, obviously, yeah. Leia says "I love you," Han says "I know." It's an iconic moment. And in this movie, it does kind of subvert that, where it's after the Kessel Run and Lando is talking to Han, and like they look at the ship, and like Han's like, "Oh, the ship's in fine shape," and the ship is obviously like messed up, and mm-hmm. Lando goes, "I hate you." And Han says, "I know."
Yeah.
And that's I think that works mostly because if you haven't seen Empire Strikes Back, that's just a fun line of dialogue, right? That's all that is. It doesn't.
Yeah.
It does call forward to Empire Strikes Back or call back to it or however you want to describe it, but it doesn't detract from the narrative of this movie. It's just a thing that Han says now.
yeah, that's just his catchphrase.
It's just his catchphrase now. But I want to talk about a couple of moments throughout the movie. That feel like they could be Phil Lord and Chris Miller moments. And there's one that I'm confident is. Like, I'm 99% sure this one is a Phil Lord and Chris Miller moment. And it's that moment when they show, when the young girl, as like the pirates, still dressed as pirates, like, show up. And they're on the planet, and Han and Woody Harrelson and I think Emilia Clarke are there, and Han's like, "Yeah, well, listen, we got, like, 30 people on the Millennium Falcon right now, and we got all this backup, so you better not do anything." And then, as soon as he says that, Lando in the Falcon just flies away, and it's in the background of the shot. That's the thing. It's in the background of the shot, and that's what made it feel like it was a Phil Lord and Chris Miller joke to me. Like, it was using the visual language of that scene to do this really funny bit. And then having Han having to very coolly step backwards after it happened, too. That felt to me like a Phil and Chris Miller joke. Like, it felt like something that could have been in 22 Jump Street.
Yeah, I did. I thought that was pretty great. And that makes sense. There was one other moment earlier in the film, in the prologue section, like on Corellia.
Was it Han's like, "This is a thermal detonator," and she's like, "No, it's not. That's a rock." And he goes like, "Ch-ch-ch." And so you just made a clicking sound with your mouth.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
Okay. Yeah. That was another one of the ones I had here.
yep.
And then there was two more that I felt like were filling Chris Miller bits, which were when they cut back to the Falcon and Lando's inside, and he's recording a book to himself, and it's like Chapter 5 of the Calrissian Chronicles.
Yeah.
and then there was one more bit during the Kessel Run when Woody Harrelson is firing a turret at TIE Fighters, and he gets like a little blowback and is like, that really hurt my thumbs.
yeah. When the turret gets shot off or something like that.
Right. And like those moments, I don't want to credit like every funny moment in the movie to Phil Lord and Chris Miller, because I'm sure that's not the case. Yeah. But those jokes specifically felt like Phil Lord and Chris Miller jokes to me. Like, they felt like jokes that would be in 21 or 22 Jump Street or the Lego Movie or Clone High or something like that. I think I've seen everything Lord and Miller have done. So I'm very intimately familiar with their work. And I've not only seen them, I have like rewatched a lot of them because I love their stuff so much. So I am, I don't want to say I know exactly what their contribution to this movie is, because I don't think we ever will. But I feel like those moments specifically felt like they were probably left over from the Lord and Miller version of the movie. And I wish we had gotten to see more of that.
Yeah, I think that would have been a much more interesting movie. I hope they start relaxing their, like, Disney starts relaxing their like, death grip on the tone and creative vision behind these movies, right? I feel like we started talking about that a little bit with the more recent Marvel movies, right, where they kind of are allowing directors to put their stamp on them more.
Right. And it's less Disney, even. I feel like with Marvel, I mean, they had that Marvel Creative Committee. Headed by Ike Perlmutter, and stuff like that. So once they got disbanded that, moved Ike Perlmutter somewhere else, you know, Kevin Feige's taken a much more grander role in the grand scheme. Like, he was already kind of the head honcho, but now he's, like, the real head honcho of Marvel. And so he's bringing in a lot more interesting and diverse voices to those movies. And I feel like with Star Wars, I feel like they have, like, it's weird, because I feel like the main saga movies have mostly been left alone. Force Awakens, not so, I mean, okay, so basically they just let Rian Johnson do whatever he wanted. And I'm all for that. Give that man a blank check is all I'm saying. But you know, with Force Awakens, you know, there was a lot of oversight ahead of J.J., and J.J. was, like, tearing his hair out during that movie. It was a very stressful period, but there almost had to be, right? That was the big return of Star Wars. And now that that's out of the way, you have the potential to do so much more interesting things. And I feel like Last Jedi did that, but, you know, Rogue One, you know, had severe reshoots on that movie. Tony Gilroy kind of took over production, and Gareth Edwards kind of was kind of stepped aside. But he didn't have the public ousting that Phil Lord and Chris Miller did, who were also almost done filming the movie and then got replaced by Ron Howard. So it's interesting to see how this has gone around. And I feel like with the main saga, they're actually taking a lot more chances than they are with these Star Wars story movies.
Which is so weird. Like, just expectations-wise, right? You would expect...
Right. I expected the opposite. I expected the story movies to be, like, these weird offshoots, and the main saga to be, like, you know, the traditional Star Wars stories. And that's turning out not to be the case. And it's interesting. I'm not angry about it, because, again, I think The Last Jedi... incredible. I realize a lot of people, some people don't agree with that. That's fine. As for me, I think I like looking back on that movie, and I haven't had a chance to rewatch it since I got the Blu-ray yet. But I saw it a couple times in theaters, and I was just blown away by it every time. And for me, I think it's better than every movie Marvel has made up to this point, Marvel Studios anyway. I'm not going to say it's better than Spider-Man 2, because, like, you know, nothing's better than Spider-Man 2.
Nothing's better.
But I would put it in, like, the top 5% of blockbusters that have been released this decade. Like, I love The Last Jedi. I think it's a perfect Star Wars movie, and it perfectly stands alongside the original and Empire Strikes Back. And Solo, I don't think even comes close to that. Like, this feels like... To me, Solo feels like the Thor of the Dark World of Star Wars movies. And that is to say... I think Thor the Dark World is fine. It's a fun little movie. I think it's all right. It has significant problems. Christopher Eccleston is completely wasted in that movie. But there's a lot of fun stuff in Thor the Dark World. But it just feels very limp compared to the other Marvel movies. And I feel like that's kind of what Solo feels like to me at this point. Like, I feel like all the other Star Wars movies have given me a lot more to offer. Even the prequels. I'm going there. I feel like even the prequels, you know, they have their share of problems. I think they are not great movies. But... they expanded the universe in huge ways. Like, they were prequels, and they kind of led up to the story that existed in the original trilogy, but they were mostly focused on new characters, and they were mostly focused on new worlds and new planets and stuff to explore. Whereas this, it's like, yeah, okay, we heard about Kessel already, and now we're at Kessel. We heard about, you know, Corellia already, and now we're on Corellia, and, like, you know, and now we're going to Tatooine. Great.
Cool. Got it. Read the plot synopsis again, because that's basically...
What was that here? During an adventure into the criminal underworld, Han Solo meets his future co-pilot Chewbacca and encounters Lando Calrissian years before joining the Rebellion.
Let's make a movie out of that.
Han Solo is friends with Chewbacca and Lando, and in a different movie, he's going to join the Rebellion, but not in this one.
Yep.
So yeah, I think we should probably start wrapping this up, Mike. Solo, a Star Wars story, is totally fine. It's adequate. It is the Thor of the Dark World of Star Wars movies. That's where I'm going with this. Mike, what's your take? What's your final?
Yeah. As a kind of action heist, crime-ish movie, I had fun. You know, somebody that enjoys that kind of plot and the tropes that come along with that type of story enough that I'm okay with it, because this was good. You know, this was enough. Basically, it was fine, and it was enough.
But that's the thing. I feel like I want more than that for a Star Wars movie. I want it to be more than enough. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I'm disappointed that that's all it is. I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
Right. Solo, a Star Wars story. Anyway, Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at MDFilmBlog on Twitter.
And you can find me at MSmithFilmBlog on Twitter and all of our podcast stuff at filmbook.com. Thank you so much for listening to FilmBookCast. I'm Mike Smith. That is Mike DiCriccio. If you're listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, take a moment to give us a review. Any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email, because we produce just so many different ones hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Now join us for the next episode of FilmBookCast, where there's a lot of things we could be talking about. I think we got either Ocean's 8 or Hereditary on the horizon. So we'll figure that out as we get to it, I think. Play it by ear. So we have a couple of weeks until the next big movie. I know Incredibles 2 is like June 15th and Jurassic World is like the week after. So I know, like, you probably don't want to see Jurassic World, but at the same time, like, I know you kind of do.
Yeah, you're right.
That's the thing. And I feel like one of our most fun early episodes was us trashing Jurassic World. So, it, you know, I hope it's good. I hope the new Jurassic World is good.
I always hope the thing we're going to see is good.
Yeah,
always.
But, you know, I'm not holding out too much hope. I think it's not going to be.
No.
But you never know. New director, new things.
That's
it
true.
It could be the slowest or worst story of Jurassic World movies, in that it's better than Jurassic World.
You tried, Mike. You tried.
And you can check out Next Complete Works, where we're talking Nicolas Cage's role in 2011's Season of the Witch, which I've heard is terrible. So looking forward to that.
Can't wait.
Thank you so much for listening, guys. We are out. Now